This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Kristen Boyles, staff attorney for the Northwest Office of Earth Justice, a nonprofit public interest law organization dedicated to protecting the magnificent places, natural resources, and wildlife of this earth, and to defending the right of all people to a healthy environment. Kristen Boyles is here today to evaluate how the Endangered Species Act has worked to protect species and their habitat here in the Pacific Northwest. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you, Diane.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about Earth Justice, and in particular, the Northwest Office?
Certainly. Earth Justice, our tagline is that we are the law firm for the environment. And it's actually true. We are a group of lawyers who have, since the early 1980s, been available for free for individuals and for groups to do public interest litigation to protect, as you said, you know, our forests, our rivers, our salmon, our air, our healthy communities. And that's been our mission from the beginning. It continues to be our mission. The Northwest Office started really back in the days of the rampant overlogging of the old growth forests. And people may remember the spotted owl controversy, or if you're from this area. And we have continued to do forestry work. We continue now to do salmon protection, other species protection, work for clean air for people and communities, and recently fossil fuel development and export.
Would you remind us of the goal of the Endangered Species Act and why it was originally signed into law?
The goal was to protect the species and the ecosystems upon which they rely. And that's actually one of my favorite points to emphasize with people. It's not just the critters and the fish that we're talking about, but it's where they live and how they can survive on their own in the wild. That goal was enunciated by Congress and passed, signed by President Nixon in late 1973. So we have passed the 40th anniversary of the Endangered Species Act, although we're sort of in the 40th year. It's a year-long celebration.
Would you remind us also of what the Endangered Species Act says? What are the key elements of the Act?
The key elements of the Act are to, using the best science and basing it on scientific information, identify species that are in danger of becoming extinct. And there's two levels of endangeredness. They can be threatened, which means that you can see trouble coming, or actually endangered, which means we are sort of at the brink of a real disaster for the species. Once the Endangered Species Act identifies those creatures, then they can be given protection on federal lands and federal actions. Habitat can be designated to say this is habitat that's critical for the survival and recovery of those species. And then there is a continual check-in with biological agencies to see how do we get from this point of not a very healthy population to recovery, so that the ultimate goal is to get off the list of protected species.
What are the key ways the Act has been used to protect species in the Northwest? What has been the overall approach?
In the Northwest, as in every place, really, it's been an approach where citizen groups and scientists and the biologists at Fish and Wildlife Service for terrestrial animals and National Marine Fisheries Service for marine animals and fish are looking at the health of populations as they go along and evaluating that and deciding whether or not these species need the protections of the Endangered Species Act. In the Northwest, the species that people will be familiar with are the northern spotted owl that was heavily threatened by rampant logging of the old growth forests on the mostly federal public lands, but also on private and state lands. The marbled murrelet, which is a small, very unique seabird that also depends on the old growth forests of our region to be able to nest and survive. Salmon populations, we still have many here in the Northwest. And then orca whales, the killer whales in the Puget Sound area, were listed most recently in 2005 as endangered.
How important has the Endangered Species Act been for the Northwest?
It's been very important. I think the Endangered Species Act has kept those species that I was just talking about, kept them with us, kept them from blinking out, which is unfortunately happening to too many species. For the owl and the murrelet, the Endangered Species Act was one of the tools that stopped that overlogging, that has talked about preserving areas. For the salmon, it's been vital for protecting river habitat and riverside habitat from development and from further destruction. I think for the orca, it's also been incredibly important to draw attention to the need to do things differently because we have these magnificent creatures living right in this incredible urban area. And I will note that the K-pod, one of our resident pods, was seen in the South Sound, was seen off the Bainbridge Ferry just on Monday. And people here connect with that. We see that all the time. We understand that there are orcas just off our shores and want to do something about it. And the Endangered Species Act has brought about that awareness.
Let's look now in more detail at the species that the ESA has been used to protect in the Northwest. You mentioned the marbled murrelet. What is this bird's importance?
Marble murrelet is a fascinating bird. It was one of the last bird species that scientists and biologists figured out where exactly they nest and what their reproductive life cycle is. Murrelets are seabirds. They have little webbed feet. They go out and they live entirely their lives at sea, except when they want to nest. And then they nest in old growth forests along the coasts, sometimes as much as 30 miles inland. And yet, because they're seabirds, fly to the sea every day while the nest is in the old growth trees. The great thing about murrelets is that they don't really build nests. Well, it's great, but it's not so great if you're dependent on old growth forests. They don't really build nests. They need a tree big enough in order to lay an egg just at the crook of the branch where the moss has gathered. And so they really are dependent on old growth forests. That murrelet species has been decimated by the old growth forests' destruction. And when we stopped a lot of that rampant overlogging in the mid-80s and 1990s, murrelet populations have been able to become, at least in our region, stable. Now, down in the southern reaches, Northern California area, the murrelets are not faring very well right now.
Could you also say something about the specifics of how the ESA was used to protect the murrelet?
Sure. In 1992, the murrelet was listed as a threatened species in response to citizen petitions, to citizen activists saying that this is a species they cared about. Several years later, there was critical habitat designated, and the critical habitat designation combined with the threatened status meant that on federal lands, national forest, BLM lands, that any logging proposals in those areas or any development proposals in those areas had to be vetted with biologists first to make sure they wouldn't cause harm. And many, of course, would, because a lot of those proposals were to clear-cut areas. And so that check-in, that biological safety net, prevented certain projects from going forward and helped have those areas of the forest remain pristine and remain untouched. The Endangered Species Act has less of a hook when it comes to strictly private actions. And so that's another reason why in certain areas you don't have as much forestry protection as others. It depends on the land ownership.
How do you see the Endangered Species Act being used in the future to continue to protect the murrelet, or will it not be necessary in this area?
I certainly hope it would not be necessary eventually. I think it's going to be necessary for the murrelets in the near future. The population that is protected is the population in Washington, Oregon, and Northern California. And so that population is a subgroup of a larger bunch of murrelets. And that's important to say, we need to keep the murrelets here, that it's not good enough that there might be some murrelets in Alaska, that we in the Pacific Northwest want murrelets to be part of the ecosystem and part of our world here. We are lucky, in Washington at least, because there is a lot of protected coastal forests. Not the case in California, primarily in the redwood areas where they have dwindling amounts of that kind of forest. And so that's one of the reasons why the protections of the murrelets are so important to keep in place now to at least give them a chance to rebuild.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Kristen Boyle, staff attorney for the Northwest Office of Earth Justice. Our topic is how the Endangered Species Act has worked to protect species in the Pacific Northwest. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Let's talk now about salmon. What have been the key threats to salmon here in this area?
Salmon face what we usually refer to as the four H's of threats. Salmon threats, or maybe the things they need, but the four H's are habitat, and the habitat protections are mainly interior, inland habitat we're talking about, which we don't think of because salmon are an ocean fish, but they have to come. Their life cycle is such that they spawn in fresh water many hundreds of miles from the ocean and then go to the ocean as young fish to live out the rest of their life cycle. So habitat is the one. Harvest is another. Fishing, we like salmon a lot around here, and fishing and fishing pressures. Hydropower is a great thing for our region, brings us a lot of carbon-free power, but it also, and we've had it for many years, stops the flow of many streams and stops salmon migration. And then the fourth H is hatcheries. Washington State has a large hatchery system. Hatcheries can be good, they can be bad, because they can be putting a lot of salmon into a system which isn't prepared to deal with it, or where the hatchery fish will outcompete the wild fish. So hatcheries are one of those areas where you have to sort of take a measured look at how that approach is happening. There are 28 salmon populations that are protected under the Endangered Species Act all along the West Coast. So that's not just Washington, Oregon, but it's also into California. We have quite a few healthy salmon populations as well, and the protections that the populations get that are in trouble are also helping the ones that are still healthy and still thriving. So that's been a good way to address these issues. Salmon are harder than other species because they do have both the coastal issues and the inland issues. And so you have to be looking at the whole suite of things that are affecting their life cycle.
And how has the ESA specifically been used to help protect the salmon?
The Endangered Species Act has come into play around here with habitat protections, primarily areas where there won't be upland development or logging, riparian zones, buffer zones, areas along the edges of streams where there will not be projects or buildings or logging to keep that area of trees and brush and shrubs to keep the stream healthy, cool, provide it the bugs it needs for fish to eat, all of those things that you need in a complicated ecosystem. The ESA has been a primary forcer of changing the way the federal U.S. Forest Service and BLM looks at how it manages its lands and how its timber sales are developed, because it no longer just looks at a species like a murrelet or a spotted owl that flies in and out, but it's looking at the way the whole watershed moves, the way the water goes from the uplands, which may not have salmon in it, but is vitally important to have that water come down to the areas where salmon are, cool and clean, so that you can continue to have the salmon survive and thrive inland.
Let's go on now to the spotted owl that you mentioned earlier. Would you remind us, why was the spotted owl listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act originally?
Overlogging. There was an amazing amount of enormous 300 to 500-year-old trees coming off the federal public lands in Washington and Oregon in the 1970s and early 1980s. Such an extent of logging for lots of old growth species that can't live anywhere else was really sending them into a downward spiral. The listing of the owl in 1990 and the protection of about 6 million acres of land for critical habitat, federal land, was really one of the things that forced an end to that kind of clear-cut overlogging and took us into an era of a more sustainable thinning type of process for commercial logging. Now, I should say that actually this weekend is the 20th anniversary of the Northwest Forest Plan, which for the people in the Pacific Northwest is a plan that governs the 19 national forests in Washington and Oregon and Northern California and how they're going to manage their logging and their development and their recreation and their water use and all the multiple uses that the Forest Service has. The Northwest Forest Plan grew out of a concern about spotted owl populations, but it also grew out of a concern about all the populations that were on the old growth forests, including the murrelet and including the salmon. And it really is, to date, the most effective region-wide plan we've had for forest management in the whole country.
What is the current status of the northern spotted owl and its habitat?
Northern spotted owl continues to be protected as a threatened species. In 2012, there was more habitat added as necessary to help it survive and recover. So we're now at about 9.5 million acres of protected land. The species has not recovered. Frankly, it has done much, much better on federal lands where these protections apply. And in those areas, it is proving to be stable. Unfortunately, on a lot of private land areas and state land areas, it is still a declining species.
Would you comment also on the threat from the barred owl, which seems to be competing with the northern spotted owl?
It's true. The barred owl is an invader from the east and has proved itself to be a species that isn't as sensitive to where it is. It does better in second growth plantations and is an aggressive territorial bird, so the spotted owl and the barred owl are in direct competition. What I will say about the barred owl, though, is the barred owl needs habitat, too. So the habitat protections that are necessary for the spotted owl benefit the spotted owl. They may benefit the barred owl as well, but these species are going to have to figure it out as they are dealing with each other in this current circumstance we have on the forests. The barred owl is not a villain in this story. The barred owl is just another species trying to be out there surviving. What we can do as people is make sure that we have the habitat protections in place for both species to have a chance that they could survive. The other thing I'd add for both the barred owl and the spotted owl is the unknown at this point impacts of climate change. We are already seeing those impacts on the ground. It's not something that's happening in the future with the changing weather patterns, changing precipitation levels, and ways the precipitation falls here in the Pacific Northwest. So the protections that we're going to need as we go on in the future will benefit both species as we're talking about this massive uncertainty of what's going to be happening on our landscapes.
Let's now look at the use of the ESA to protect orca whales in the Puget Sound area. What is the status of the resident orcas in Puget Sound?
The orcas in Puget Sound are listed as endangered. Unfortunately, there's only 80 members of the southern resident killer whale population here in Puget Sound. They were protected in 2005, and critical habitat has been designated for them. They are a magnificent part of the killer whale populations that we see around here. Mostly here in Puget Sound, we see the southern residents. There are northern resident killer whales that are up in Canada, and there are transient populations which come and go, but they are part of that web of marine life that we're so accustomed to living with. The Endangered Species Act is helping in many ways. I mean, the Endangered Species Act for orcas, because they are a top predator, the protections for salmon and the protections for other ocean critters actually help the orca because that's the primary food source for the southern resident whales are salmon. They are not seal eaters. There are some populations which are seal eaters. The Endangered Species Act is helping with protections from sonar that's used primarily by the Navy for warfare training exercises. Very devastating to not only the southern resident killer whales, but to other whales, other dolphin species, which are so dependent upon their echolocation and their sonar abilities to navigate and find food. The southern residents are also at the moment threatened with a vast increase in oil tanker traffic, as we are talking about increases of oil coming off of our shores, either from pipelines in Canada or from crude by rail being transported to our ports. Very big concerns about the impacts that increased oil traffic and the horrible possibility of an oil spill will have on orcas. And so the orca biologists are part of that conversation as the community plans for what we're going to do in the face of that new threat.
What do you think will be the focus of using the ESA to protect orcas looking toward the future?
In our office right now, the focus has been on the sonar harms because the U.S. Navy has basically designated the entire West Coast as its training area exercise place. And we believe that there should be some places, some particularly critical places, such as the Olympic National Park Marine Sanctuary, that are off limits to training exercises and perhaps even seasonal restrictions to when training exercises take place. And so our focus at the moment has been to really get a handle on this increase on the use of the sonar for naval training, not to stop it, but to figure out where it should happen and when it should happen. I do think that the Endangered Species Act will play a role in how projects about fossil fuel transportation, whether it be oil or coal or liquefied natural gas, how they play out as those decisions get made in the future.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Kristen Boyles, staff attorney for the Northwest Office of Earth Justice. Our topic is how the Endangered Species Act has worked to protect species here in the Pacific Northwest. How well has the Endangered Species Act worked to protect Northwest species overall? You've alluded to this, but
I think it has done the job it was intended to do, which is sort of stop the bleeding. We still have all these species with us. Some of them are doing better than others, and some of them are doing better than others in certain places. It has changed our activity and development patterns. I think most notably when you think about riparian area protections and building houses in King County, that's the county here where we're sitting, and whether or not people are building right up to the edges of the streams or providing that buffer so you can have healthy streams for salmon, for example. It has not And I don't think it can bring us all the way to fully recovered, vibrant species unless we do a lot more than just simply the bare minimum. The Endangered Species Act says we are at a threshold of disaster for these species, right? These are species that have to be on the brink of extinction within the foreseeable future before you list them and get the protections in place. So one thing that we need to do, I think, is also talk about all the species that are in our region, all the species that are all part of this ecosystem we live with and in, and figure out what we can get ahead of the curve with that. And then the Endangered Species Act can operate as it is meant to be, which is really the emergency room, last straw measures for species survival.
In your view, in addition to the Endangered Species Act, what other approaches are most promising and effective for helping protect Northwest species?
The approaches that seem to work best are when people think holistically about what people need and what the environment that we are all in needs, and balancing that all out. So if you have the Endangered Species Act acting as that safety net, you have other laws and statutes requiring really in-depth looks at what are the harms and impacts to decisions you're making, whether that's under environmental reviews, under the state or federal level, to make sure that the decisions we make going forward really make sense and really are the least harmful to the places we live in. Talking about development of floodplains in an ever-increasing urban area, talking about making sure our waterways are clean. How do we dispose of our wastes in this area with, you know, our millions of people? Thinking about clean air issues is also important because we all need the air and the salmon as well. So I think what we need to do is be looking not just to the Endangered Species Act, which is really that staunch the bleeding kind of thing, statute, but really looking at how do we plan about what we want our community to look like in 10 years, 20 years, 50 years.
As an attorney who's used the Endangered Species Act, what has been most disappointing for you over the last period of time?
I think the continuing attacks on the Endangered Species Act is the most frustrating. It has been a fantastically successful act as far as protecting species. It has proven to be a flexible act as far as letting development happen, perhaps not in the way originally envisioned, but in a way that lets things occur while we have the protections in place for species. And yet every year we hear about congressional attacks on the Endangered Species Act, casting it as some sort of draconian end to all economic development, which it is, you know, plainly not. Anybody who's lived around here will see that we have plenty of economic development while at the same time we have the protections we need for these species. There is, again, in Congress this year, hearings about overhauling the Endangered Species Act. There were four bills introduced in the last 2 weeks to change parts of the Endangered Species Act. It's a battle over and over again to just protect this basic law, and I find that very disappointing. I think people should accept that this is what we do in the world to take care of our world and the places we live. We need to have these critters. It is a moral responsibility to take care of these places and ecosystems, and that then we should go on and figure out how to do it and not continually fight about rolling back protections and going back to a less scientific view of the world.
Well, you've alluded to this a bit earlier in regard to some of the specific species that you've worked on, but how do you see the ESA being used in the future?
I think it will continue to play the role that it has played for species that are already on the list. So I suspect it will continue to help us protect old-growth forests. It will continue to help with salmon populations, hopefully protect our orca population here in Puget Sound. You know, there are other species that are protected as well that aren't nearly as charismatic. Rockfish, which are particularly unattractive fish, are also protected here in Puget Sound under the Endangered Species Act. It will help continue to do that. I think it will help in our planning as we look forward to how this area around Puget Sound remains a both urban area and a wild area, a delicate balance at the say the least. And I think more species, unfortunately, will get added to the protections of the Act as we go along. I hope not that many, but I think that that's the way the development pressures will push, is to get more species protected, and then hopefully then we'll get forward with the business of recovering those species.
How do you see the Endangered Species Act interfacing with climate change issues?
Climate change should be considered part of the threats that are facing endangered species or facing species that are being considered for protections under the Endangered Species Act. And it is really one of the areas that's sort of the forefront of how we protect endangered species. A lot of changes are happening to the ecosystems and the places where these species live. And the Endangered Species Act should be able to bring in the best science about how climate is changing and will change in order to protect those species. For instance, not in this area, but there are species of coral in the Caribbean that were listed solely because of impacts that are happening to the ocean acidification process due to climate change. And so the major threat to their continued existence is ongoing climate change. What the biologists are doing is saying, well, if we can't do anything immediately about climate change, I mean, that change is happening now, what are the other things we can do to make sure that these critters survive? And those are things like removing other stressors, making sure there's plenty of protected habitat. So even if the habitat is not functioning as it should under climate, that it can still function. That there are migratory corridors. Some of these species are going to move in order to survive. And that you're really talking about looking at all of the species in an area on an ecosystem basis as opposed to one little population at a time. All of those issues are ones that you have to take into account with climate change, because climate change comes and changes the whole picture for how these protections are going to occur. Climate change also comes in when you're talking about species and you're talking about actions that we will take to exacerbate climate change. I mean, the continued use of fossil fuels, the continued burning of coal and oil, the transportation of those materials over long distances in order to bring them places are all adding to climate change, and that affects the species. And so linking the species to the fossil fuel development in the United States and Canada is particularly important to try to get a handle on what's right now sort of a rampant development of the Alberta tar sands and the Bakken shale oils in North Dakota.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I'd like to leave our listeners with a message of appreciation for even listening to a talk about the Endangered Species Act, but also thinking about how you live in the environment you live in, where are the species, how you interact with those ecosystems, those forests, those rivers, those ocean areas, and how we can think about what actions can help the whole community of both critters and people. And that the Endangered Species Act is the important piece to keep there so we don't have animals on our watch sliding into extinction.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Kristen.
Thank you, Diane.
You are just listening to Kristen Boyle, staff attorney for the Northwest Office of Earth Justice. For more information, check on the web at earthjustice.org. Again, that's earthjustice.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on demand, and then podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and kexp.org.